Welcome to Wholehearted Loving. I'm Stephanie.
Hi, I'm Georgiana.
Today we are going to be talking about revving ourselves up, which is different than soothing ourselves. But before we get started, we are going to do a body-based self-connection practice to connect with ourselves before we connect with each other and this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I haven't done this in a while. It just came. Hold on, I'm just taking off a ring. Let's sit on our hands. In a way that feels comfortable. So you might need to adjust where you position your hands. But really, it's so that you can feel what some pressure feels like on your hands. See if this is a comforting feeling or a neutral feeling or a gross feeling. And work with that accordingly. If it's neutral or pleasant, then we can practice just being there, letting yourself enjoy it for one or three breaths. If it's not good feeling, then the invitation is to change it to something that would feel better.
This is interesting. So I like the sensation. Mm-hmm. And it's summoning something vague from childhood about being in trouble and having to sit on your hands.
Neat. I don't
know what that is. Yeah.
And is it something that feels like, oh, it summons that childhood thing up so much and it's uncomfortable, so I need to stop and do something different? Or is it, I'm open to just be curious and notice how it feels?
Curious. Yeah, it was more mind noticing and a sensation noticing and uncoupling those.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a key thing to notice when things have been coupled up together that aren't really helpful or necessary to have coupled up together anymore, and learning mm-hmm. to uncouple. Right. So how can, in this case, you uncouple that experience of sitting on your hands, meaning you're in trouble, and get to like loosen that up and maybe couple it up with sitting on my hands is something that feels good and nourishing and settling. I noticed the difference of like flipping my hands. So if I sit on my palms, it feels a certain way. And if I flip my hands to sitting on the top of my hands, it just feels different. And they both feel good for a certain amount of time in a different way. And I have a different association. I don't know if it's because it's part of the Dutch language or it was an expression I heard often when I was in the Netherlands. Maybe it was an expression, something about like, can you learn to sit on your hands? And what it meant was like, can you learn to like just stay out of it and observe what happens? Can you allow something to unfold? Can you not get into someone's business and trust them, watch how they let things move to that next place? Can you allow someone to be in their own discomfort? Can you allow someone to try to build this skill without overtaking it, doing it for them? That's the association that I have with it.
That is so neat. Cultural differences always floor me. I'm like, do we have an English saying that's like parallel to that? And I think the closest is probably just leave it alone, which has totally different implications. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I think the Dutch, if I remember, is something like op je handen zitten, like sitting on your hands. I think it was an actual expression.
Cool.
Yep. The caretaker people pleaser in me had a lot of value in learning to sit on my hands.
I bet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Letting people have their experience is quite a gift.
Yep. And very uncomfortable in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a good segue. Because one thing we're doing when we're assisting someone with getting revved up is certainly not letting them have their own experience. We're definitely getting our hands into their business. And what we're talking about here, the feeling of being revved up, amped up, irritated, increasing irritation or frustration or fear or anxiety.
Yeah.
It's a mood.
Like overwhelmed. So right now we're not talking about revved up and like energized, ready to take productive action. We're talking about like revved up in like irritability level just keeps rising, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And fears. So like there are moods where I definitely want to maintain my current level of snark and irritation. Mm-hmm. And there are moods where I know that that's not serving me. That's not the space that I want to be in. And there are different people that I will call for those different moods. There are people I know who will collude with my ego. They'll be completely on side. Whatever's irritating me, they're immediately jumping on board. We're going to talk about it. And then there are people who just will not give me that energy. You know, is this serving you right now? Do you want to keep talking about this and feeling this way? No?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Then let's talk about something else.
Yeah, and it's neat because, like, there can be some people who approach it that way. And, like, that has a little bit more of, like, a bringing awareness to the situation, a little bit sterner way of, like, hey, like, is this what you want to feel right now? Do you want to keep going down this road? If not, let's switch. And there's also a way of, like, calling someone up if you know someone who fits this, you know, profile, where they're going to bring a really loving, soft energy of presence and not help you get even more revved up, right? And all of those are important to have access to, all three of those, even the people who collude with you, because sometimes we want to go to that place or need to go to that place. Some of us are actually afraid to go to that place of feeling revved up, but others are so used to living in a revved up state that we need to actually learn how to be in a less revved up, more, you know, neutral, calmed, neutralized space. And I think it's important to notice when each one of those serves you and is needed, right? Because we're not talking about let's never feel revved up. Feeling revved up is bad. So we should always just be like nicely tempered. It's not about that. It's knowing like when is which state necessary and for how long and when is it no longer serving me for what matters for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and getting to know these different sensations in your body. There definitely was a time where I was probably always revved up and I just didn't know that. That was baseline, normal.
Mm-hmm.
I also remember as a teenager, I had occasion to be given a Valium at some point. And it wasn't until I had taken this Valium that I realized that I was revved up at other times. I didn't know this at the moment, but when I'm looking at it in hindsight, I'm like, that feeling of extraordinary peace, which I can now achieve in many healthy ways, gave me such a contrast to what I felt normally and how I also must have been behaving normally. You know, the people around me said, like, you are very calm. you seem like you're feeling really good. It was like, yeah, I really am. The contrast between just the story making, the ruminating, the anxiety, like I've been historically quite an anxious person and surrounded myself, I'm sure, with people who could join me in that state or contribute to that state because that's just the natural state we were in, right? That's what made sense. Mm-hmm. And now I can feel when things are escalating for me internally and when that's not helpful and is not something I want and I can do something about it.
Awesome. Can I ask you some questions about that?
Yeah.
I want us to walk through, like, how do you identify that you're in a revved up state? And I'll ask you, you know, to share a few different things that are indicators, right? So what are some thoughts that are like go-to thoughts in your mind. You know that if my thoughts are going to that place, it sort of indicates I'm in a revved up place, whether it's thoughts about yourself or other people or life and how the world works.
Mm-hmm. So the flavor of thought is fast. A lot of thoughts, a lot of overlapping and conflicting thoughts. Anger isn't quite right. There's this like self-righteous put upon kind of thinking feeling that I can get into, which is a really key indicator for me, that I'm revved up.
So like, what would be like a sentence be that would run through your mind? That's like self-righteous indicator.
There's often lots of thoughts of like, other people are stupid or crazy, you know, they must just be, you know, nuts. I can picture my mom anytime something doesn't make sense with a person, she'll be like, well, they're crazy or on drugs. And it's that kind of flavor, you know, the curiosity and compassion is not present in my thoughts.
Not present. Awesome. I think that's good to notice. What about body sensations? How do you know, especially now you were able to identify contrast, what's a body sensation that lets you know, hey, I'm in a revved up place right now?
So the sensation of the racing thoughts is present in my head. And there's an anxious kind of fullness in my chest. Like I become very aware of my upper middle back and chest. And it's like this forward moving, inserting myself, hurrying kind of a feeling.
I think the forward movement. So like impulse, what are the body impulses? What are the body, what's the body posture, right? That those are other identifiers. Like I'm the same, like if I'm revved up, my body's sort of leaning forward, has that forward pull of I got to do something.
Yeah. I might also have to get up and like pace. Everything that is the opposite of settling and calmness. I become a physical manifestation of that.
Okay, next question. What are like behaviors that show, that give you an indication that you're revved up? So by behaviors, I'm going to categorize in different things, in different ways. Like, what do you do with objects? Like, how do you relate with things? Like, I'm thinking doors and like the glass and like, are you, are you doing anything with objects that's different when you're revved up versus not?
Definitely. Irritation and frustration would be present. So if I was handling objects during this kind of a state, it might be wanting to throw them or slam them down or, yeah, there's like a angry carelessness. I think you described me as hostile in the last episode, and there's a flavor of that. Hostile carelessness and like, it's like I'm resenting objects for having a nice, the objects are calm. I'm not.
Screw them all.
Yeah.
The damn stapler. Getting in the way.
Yeah.
Jerk. Okay. What about behaviors? Like, I think it's really important to notice how do we interact? Like, even like if you were like putting on your shoes in a revved up state, how might that be different than if you're putting on your shoes in a like not revved up state?
Well, if there's ever a time I'm going to fumble being able to tie a knot, it'll be then. Oh, my camera's going wonky. Hang on a sec. How's it fixed? Okay. Yeah. So if I was tying my shoes in a revved up state, probably I'll be screwing it up and getting irritated by it somehow. And with a lot of like, ugh, ah, and eye rolling.
Sounds yeah. And facial expressions are also indicators. Okay, great. What about how you behave with people?
I might be short and, or I might be really animated. There would be more and faster words. There would be more sarcasm. I can also kind of seek connection in those moments. So like connecting with people over my irritation and revved upness can feel good. But it won't have the flavors of compassionate connection. It's mm-hmm. the flavors of like irritated connection and more righteousness and sarcasm.
Mm-hmm. And after that flavor of connection, how do you feel?
If I'm interacting with someone who's colluding with my ego, then it would be just sort of baseline standard. If I'm interacting with someone who is more compassionate and loving and not colluding, then I'm probably going to have some embarrassment and shame afterwards.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Can you explain what's an example of someone colluding with your ego? Like, what might they be saying to you? Like, what does that mean?
Basically, it's just unquestioning agreement. So if I'm bitching about something, if I'm in a victim mentality about my situation and I just want to complain about it, I've got wonderful awake friends who are like, okay, this is the state you're in. Like, do you want to be here? Let's go there. Which is a very different vibe than people who are just like, yeah, all those people are idiots. Like, you're right. You screw them, jerks. That's colluding with the ego, agreeing mm-hmm. with all of the what I've made everything mean that's revving me up in this condition. Yeah. They're just on that page with me.
Yeah, they continue to rev you up. Right. And there's a difference I find in that versus someone validating, like, yeah, like it makes sense to feel frustrated about that situation or be annoyed, but that doesn't necessarily rev someone up.
Yeah.
Right. And, I think it's neat to notice, you know, what someone's response does to us. Does it rev us up? Do we want them to rev us up? Are we willing to let someone meet us, but have it be something that feels more settling?
Validation versus collusion. I think that's a good distinction.
Mm-hmm. And, I've been on both sides before of like wanting someone to collude with me and rev me up and like using someone's revving up collusion as validation versus just like, yeah, it makes sense to feel that way.
Yeah.
Right. And, I've also been on the side of the trying to be helpful friend and like colluding with someone, like sort of revving them up almost as a way of saying like, I care about you. I see you. This makes sense because I didn't know how to validate it any other way. Yeah. I didn't know how to help someone feel better using, you know, just cleaner validation of the feeling and the experience versus, yeah, he is an asshole and he shouldn't have done that to you. And what the hell was he thinking? Right. Mm-hmm. And you should do X, Y, Z and make him feel like crap now.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember a very distinct time in my life really practicing like not going to that place with people, like practicing like how do I meet someone where they're at and really validate their experience without revving them up some more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a friend who is not in this work. She's very self-expressed and hasn't needed this sort of work that I've needed to be able to really express myself. And so as I've shifted over the years, I still want to be able to share my experience with her. But in the past, it would have been a revving up thing, which is not what I'm looking for now, you know? So she'll immediately get on board with me and then I'll have to be like, no. It's normal to feel this way. You know, the person that I'm bitching about or whatever I'm bitching about is not actually bad or wrong. I'm just feeling the way I'm feeling. And, you know, it's more validation and love that I'm looking for than increasing the drama and deepening into it.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's good that you're noticing that. And like, I believe that we get to that point when we notice contrast. I think it's really important that you said that, because there was a time in my life where I didn't know, like, there was no contrast. I didn't actually realize I was revved up probably most of the time. I just thought that was normal. And it wasn't until, like, at some point I knew, I'm like, I think I live primarily in my head and I don't know how to be in my body. And meditation also doesn't work for me and makes me want to crawl out of my skin. And I met this woman who became my yoga teacher, Maitreyi. And at the time, she was offering a yoga teacher training. And I thought, there's no part of me that wants to be a yoga teacher, but I love everything you're teaching. And she said, well, lots of people do this program with no intention of teaching. It's that they want to learn that skill for themselves. They want to have that experience themselves. I'm like, well, in that case, sign me up. And I can't remember if it was a year-long program or so, but I just practiced with her. And it was just more my jam. It was like, it worked for me. It was really conscious and intentional movement and breath. And that was a lot easier for me to access than just laying on the ground or sitting in a chair and like traditional sort of meditating of like not doing anything. And it wasn't always comfortable. And it was a lot of repetitive things that we did that, like, for my novelty brain was a bit challenging. But I was willing to practice because I felt like this is an area that I want to grow some skill in. And over time, I'm like, oh, this is what it feels like to feel relaxed and at ease in my body and my mind. What the hell is this? Where has this been all my life? And I'm like, I finally know how to create that experience for myself. Wow. And then I now know how to enjoy that experience. And I talk often about, you know, once you know what peace and ease feels like in your body and you start to become familiar with it, you start to learn to enjoy it, you become the curator and protector of your ease and peace in your mind and your body. And so when you talked about knowing the contrast, I love to remind people that you can learn how to feel that contrast and create that contrast and live a life that helps you make more choices that create more of that peace and ease. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you, like, what helps you identify that you're revved up, right? Thoughts, behaviors, sensations, you know, all those kinds of things. Because the more aware we are of the signs, we can catch it earlier. We're like, oh, I'm revved up. And you don't even have to do anything about it. You don't have to change it. You don't have to want to change it. The first step I found was just recognizing this is revved up state.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I can ask myself, do I want to continue to do things that keep me revved up? Or would I like to feel a little less revved up? And in that case, if I do want that, what are some things that would be helpful to sort of bring some ease back into the picture?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. So there's certain thoughts we can think. There's certain sensations we can focus on. There's certain things we can do that are either going to rev us up or help us bring some neutrality to how we're feeling. Right. And you can talk about this from like a nervous system regulation place. But I think for the purpose of just understanding revving up, like, we don't need that. We don't need that framework. But like, do you notice what it feels like to feel revved up? What I've noticed is that, and this was hard to admit, I think at first, was I'm like, I think I'm a little bit addicted and dependent to this feeling. Because I have a busy life. For as long as I've known myself, I've had a busy life. How that looks now is I'm like driving my kids to like lots of sports all over the place. And there's a lot of logistical things to like keep track of and when I'm feeding them and where we're going and what bags we need to bring and who I need to arrange a ride for, all that kind of stuff. And like, there are certain times because of weather or whatever, things get canceled. And all of a sudden, I have nothing that I have to do that day that I typically would have to shuttle my kids around to. And this thing in my body happens of like, what am I going to do? I'm not going to have that revved up feeling all day long of going from here to there and wherever. Mm. And that's when I recognize that I'm like, oh, my body wants me to create now something else, either some worries in my mind or some other to-dos that bring me back up to revved up state. And then I'll ask myself, like, but do you really want to feel revved up? Like, you have the opportunity for a bit more ease today. Mm. Are you willing to let yourself enjoy that? Are you willing to curate a day where you get to enjoy some more ease? Mm-hmm. And here I'm just talking about revved up in that, like, there's things to get done, right? That sometimes add a little bit more stress to life. This is not even like I'm like totally taking myself to a place of mental overwhelm. But there's that version of revving ourselves up too, right? Mm-hmm. That might not be necessary.
Yeah. So I'm curious what you would recommend for someone who's accustomed to that state of revving, either mm-hmm. emotionally, psychologically, or tangibly because of a busy life, mm-hmm. who has not yet cultivated that feeling of relief or less pressure, where that feeling of ease might still feel uncomfortable and unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm. I think a big thing in the beginning is to be compassionate with yourself, that it makes sense that if you've lived most of your life familiar with feeling revved up, that that's just going to be your autopilot to create more of that, that nothing's wrong with you. I think it's important to be reminded of the fact that it's just a skill. It's just another skill, the ability to notice feeling revved up, the ability to make choices that lower that feeling of being revved up. That's just something you can practice. So I like to offer, you know, some acknowledgement and compassion, and also a reminder of like hope of what's possible. And then the next parts are like really seemingly simple and probably annoying to people, which really is like, can you smush your foot into the ground and feel it right now? Mm. Right? Can you, if it feels like, can you notice if you place a hand on your body, does that feel nicer or worse than not having a hand on your body? And if it feels nicer to do that, can you let yourself enjoy that for one breath? Right? Which is basically, can I create a moment of reprieve or ease in my body or my mind? Right? Even if your mind keeps going with things, can I feel that with this touch on my body right now, that's sort of a pleasant feel? And it begins there. Mm-hmm. And really, I find that's the most important part. Once you're willing to begin with that and practice that enough, people always come back to us and say, I heard your voices. I heard your voices that said, you know, can you feel your feet on the ground or your butt in the chair? And can you place a hand on you if that would feel good? Can you look at something and notice your breath? And they're like, I felt better. And then they get excited that they can create a moment where they felt better. They felt some reprieve. And then they start craving that and wanting that and feeling empowered to create that on their own. Mm-hmm. And then over time, you know, we meet with people and they're like, yeah, like I could have worked myself up some more, but I just didn't want to feel that way. And that's because they're starting to like get hooked on that feeling of, it feels nice to feel relief and reprieve and some easefulness. Mm-hmm. I don't have to create more tension in my mind or body right now. It doesn't feel good to do that. It also doesn't help me move towards what matters to me in my life if I do that. Mm. So I think it's just being open to trying something new and being open to trying something that probably seems very insignificant and like not helpful.
Yeah. You know, I think it was sort of envy that got me to this place. Envy and misery. I didn't understand what the hell anybody was talking about. I didn't know how to be in my body. All of these sorts of practices and slowing down and ritual to me felt stupid. I didn't get it. And I knew I was unhappy, and I could see that the people who were telling me to do all these good things were obviously feeling better than I was. And I didn't understand how, but I was desperate. And I trusted them. So I just went through the motions. And it didn't matter that I didn't understand. It just works on your subconscious. It shifts the way you experience things. And over time, I mean, I can't believe how much I've changed.
Yeah, right? There was some openness. You're willing to look for and lean into openness, which I think is just a factor for all kind of positive change in our life. And this reminds me of, you know, over the course of years working with people, we've had the whole spectrum of people. People who are like, no, I know this. This totally makes sense. I know this is where I need to begin and I'm all in. And then there's people who are super resistant, who think it's ridiculous and dumb and will just say that out loud. And then there's people who are resistant and think it's dumb, who won't say it out loud, but they'll think it. But the common thread amongst all the people we've worked with is an openness to try anyway, and an openness to be open to seeing what happens. And there has not been a single person who has said, this doesn't work. Right, no matter how much depression or anxiety they have experienced in their life, everyone who's practiced this stuff has said, I felt reprieve. I felt empowered that I can do something that helps me feel better. Someone had said this, I think, not too long ago in our Priming the Body for Peace program. They said, I really love this program because the things we practice here are repeatable. I can repeat them in my everyday life. I can do them on my own. They're simple enough. They take not that much time. I can fit it into my life. And that's what it's all about if you're open, right? So you can be resistant. You cannot believe it. You cannot understand it. All of that is okay. And we always welcome whatever way you come in. And there's nothing wrong with that. And it's the openness. And it's the cool excitement when people come back. They're like, they always have a story to tell us about some hard thing that they were going through and then how they use these really simple things. And they're like, how the heck does this work? And they're like, I don't actually care how it works. It works. And I had a client recently. She was talking to a colleague, and her colleague was just telling her how overwhelmed she was and, you know, how she's struggling in life. And she said, you know, you really need to try this thing that I've been doing. And like, you know, it's just about like really simple things, like feeling your butt on the chair and looking at something and maybe a slow exhale of your breath. And she's like, my friend or my colleague looked at me like I was nuts. And I also couldn't really articulate why it all was working and what a big difference it made in my life. But like, I felt compelled to tell her. I felt like I was keeping something from her by not letting her know there's this possibility out there. And it's really simple. But I think it's like that for a lot of people. Like, it doesn't make sense. It seems sort of outrageous. It seems like this is too simple for it to be able to work in such big, heavy, dire kind of experiences and situations that people have struggled with for years and decades and tried all sorts of things and all sorts of therapy. And this is not knocking therapy, but this is such a good like thing to like accompany other ways of working with things. And then one day they're like, I get it. It works. And that's, it's really neat to see people have that kind of transformation, that kind of right. belief in self, that kind of belief in what's possible that they want to now share it with other people, even though they might be like, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but just trust me. Just practice this thing.
Just practice it. Yeah. It's so funny how hard it can be without the explanation. Or like when I think back to my unscientific explanations of years ago, it would almost be delivered with like an irritation, especially for people who I knew were in this work together. I'm like, look, man, you just need to feel your butt. Feel your butt. Feel your feet. Look at that rectangle. Look at it. And it is magic. I mean, our nervous system extends to every part of our body. And all of these tools we're describing are just designed to settle that, to uncouple the wiring from fear and anxiety or whatever's coming up and just be present with a settled nervous system. And of course, this is magic.
Yeah, I was recently working with a woman who has had many panic attacks over the last couple of decades and really become afraid of them, which makes sense. And she's been practicing this stuff and she's like, I can't believe how much of a difference it makes.
Yes.
And she's like, just recently, I didn't have to take a Xanax to get through a panic attack. I could just ride it out. And she's like, that is the biggest win for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was just so proud that she had options, right? Yeah. Like, we're not slamming medication if you need it, but like, she felt really good about having options.
Yeah. It is. Oh, my camera's going crazy again. Okay. It is like magic. I remember having a panic attack maybe a year ago. And I stopped what I was doing. And I just looked for rectangles and breathed, and it was diffused. Like, it was immediately diffused in a way. Like, years ago, I've had panic attacks that sent me to the hospital. I thought I was having a heart attack. And if they had told me to feel my bum and feel my feet, I mean, at the time, I probably would have sworn at them. But it really, really does work like magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, yeah. I love that it's simple. It's free. You have access to it anytime. Right?
Yeah. So in the context of revving ourselves up in times where we might not actually desire to be revved up, we can implement these tools very easily and freely and in 10 seconds.
Yeah, like one thing that I've noticed my body craves when I'm feeling either just revved up or like untethered, uneasy, sort of a bit all over the place, is I really like the feeling of this hold where right now I'm just placing one hand on my back, one hand on my front. I realize I really, that's this containment feeling of I've got me and I've got whatever swirling around. And that's a very calming feeling. I feel the craving of that in different moments. And I could either go like this and do what I just described, or, you know, I'll walk people through, can you feel the back of the seat, you know? And can you feel the hand on your front of your body? And on the exhale, can you lean into the back of the seat a little bit more? On the inhale, can you feel the front hand a little bit more? Right. But then you can also lean up against the wall and feel that pressure and have a hand on your front or hold a pillow, or you can lay on the floor and place something on top of you. I do this thing at the gym, and it's because I enjoy this feeling. I lay on the floor in pigeon pose. I really like to stretch out my legs and my glutes. And then I asked them, and I remember the first time I asked them, I was like, not embarrassed, but I was like, I'm going to ask you something a bit weird. Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, sure. I said, can you take one of those huge weight plates, you know, that you're using on like deadlifts and all that kind of stuff, squats? I'm like, can you take one of those really heavy plates and just lay it on my back? And so the front of my body was feeling the pressure of my leg and the floor. The back of my body had the weight of this weight plate on me. And I just felt like so held. Like, it was such a good feeling for me. So like, I know, my body knows now that if I don't want to feel revved up, That is one way, like a very quick, almost immediate way. My body sighs. My nervous system like is resetting. And then the next three breaths feel very different. And where my mind goes for the next three breaths feels very different.
Yeah.
So it's like exploring which things give you a sense of ease. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to walk us through one of those practices to close?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is I just described earlier front and back pressure and touch. I'll walk us through a bottom and top kind of thing. So you can either, if you're standing, you can use your feet. If you're sitting, you can use your butt. I think if you're laying, what would be nice would be like if you're laying and like pushing your feet up against something so you feel some pressure. Mm-hmm. But it's going to go a little bit like this. We're going to place one hand or two hands on the top of your head. I like one. And so on the first, let's just feel the hand. Can you feel the hand on your body? And when you feel the hand on your head, can you just be there for one breath? And then we'll practice feeling the bottom, whether that's your feet or your butt, pushing against whatever you're sitting on, standing on. If you're laying down, can you push your feet against something? Feel the pressure of that. And what we'll do is we'll pair now with breath, which is on the inhale. Just bring some awareness to the hand on your head. Maybe that means you need to move your hand a little bit. On the exhale, can you allow yourself to sink in more to what your butt's sitting on or what your feet are pushing against? And then we just cycle through that two more times, following your own breath. So inhaling to notice the top hand. Exhaling to feeling your butt or your feet. Feeling some pressure there. And inhaling to feel the top hand. Exhaling to sink in a little bit more with the feet or the butt. And then now I just like to follow impulse. Impulse for me says, can you place your hand on the front of your body? So now I have a hand on the front of my body and a hand on the top of my head. And that feels nice for me. So I'm going to stay there and let myself enjoy that for three breaths. And I can just feel it. That first exhale, I was like, right? You might feel it or you might not feel it on that first exhale, but you're just noticing. And then impulse pulled my hand that was on top of my head to like want to hold the back of my head, right? So that's what's neat too, is you start noticing impulse. Your body's telling you, oh, this is what would feel nice next. I see the look on your face and I feel that way. I'm like, ah, oh, I feel very nice. Mm-hmm. I feel the opposite of revved up right now.
Yeah, this is, it's like the Valium when I was a teenager.
And you didn't have to get a prescription. You don't have to deal with side effects or possible dependency on it. Right?
Yeah. So nice.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to have options. You want to have options.
Yeah, that's for sure. Lovely. Anything else you want to say on the topic of getting revved up? Shall I rev us back up on the topic?
This is actually what inspired this, like this kind of topic, was the book that I had read that you're starting to read, Addicted to Drama by Dr. Scott Lyons. And he talks about revving up. And I think this is an exercise he spoke about or gave to a client of just like putting your hand up when you notice you're feeling revved up. And what I like about that is it just helps us register, oh, it's happening right now. And I like to add it like a little bit of playfulness and lightness and some humor. So when I walk clients through this, I'm like, Just do a little wave. Oh, hey, revving up right here, over here. It's happening. and just meet it with some lightness of it's happening. No big deal. You don't have to do anything about it. You're just practicing noticing it. Yeah. So yeah. When I work with clients, you know, they'll practice that. They're like, oh, revving up over here.
What's happening?
Yeah, it's happening. Being a curious observer of your experience is quite a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okie dokie. Well, that's going to finish us off for this week then, yeah?
Yeah. I'm going to add one last thing. Can I add one last thing? I think we always talk about like just noticing yourself first, getting to know yourself. But another thing you could practice is notice how other people, how you notice when other people are revving up. And just notice it with compassion, like, oh, they're revving up right now. I see that, right? Or notice kids, notice animals, like when they're revving up, just to get familiar with like how it looks, how it sounds, right? And get familiar that it's just a human experience. It happens. There's no shame in it. We don't have to shame others for it. We don't have to shame ourselves for it, but we just want to practice noticing it. That's all.
Thank you, Gigi. Okie doke. Well, then, as always, please do like, follow, and subscribe. And if anything we've said here today has been helpful for you, please share with somebody that you care about. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.